If you want to turn to the book of Exodus, we're going to be looking at chapters 32 and 33 primarily this evening. Primarily chapter 33, but we're going to look at chapter 32 as a little bit of background. It will be a story that will probably be familiar to most of us. We want to study tonight about dwelling with God. We want to talk about choosing God over others. And as we look at these two chapters, we want to learn from Moses. Now, Moses was a man. He was not God. He wasn't an angel. He wasn't divine in any way. And he did commit sins. We only have really record of a couple of the things that he did that were problematic for him. But certainly he probably did other things. But he was God's servant. And as such, he was what is we often refer to types and antitypes. The type is something in the Old Testament that is a shadow of something that's going to come in the New Testament. And Moses was a type, he was a shadow of Christ who was going to come. In fact, Moses himself prophesied that the Lord will raise up a prophet like me, and you shall hear him. And he was then the deliverer, the savior of his people. He saved slavery in Egypt, whereas Christ saves us from spiritual slavery to sin and Satan. So he is... There are some parallels there, certainly. Now, as he led them out into the wilderness, and they escaped the Egyptians, and God was with them, and God made his plans to dwell with his people. He wanted to be in the midst of them. But while Moses, in fact, when they came to Mount Sinai, God was with them. And God was even going to speak to them. They came to Mount Sinai. They prepared themselves. And they came out to hear the Lord speak. And the first time he spoke, they didn't want to have anything else to do with that. And they told Moses, look, you go talk to God and you come back and you tell us what he said. We don't want to hear him speak anymore. It's just too scary. And I was amazed by all these folks that want to hear God talk to them. If he ever did, they go, well, God told me this and God told me this. Look, if God actually told them something, they'd be scared out of their wits. They wouldn't know where to turn if he actually came down and spoke to them. But God did speak to Moses. And the Bible even says that he spoke to Moses face to face as a man talks with his friend. And that's pretty amazing. And so Moses then went up on the Mount Sinai, to hear what the Lord had to say and to receive the law for the children of Israel. And he was up there then from chapter 20 all the way through chapter 32, to chapter 32. And while he was up there, of course, the children of Israel down at the bottom of the mountain got Aaron to make them the golden calf. And we ought to be familiar with that. If we're not, we need to learn that lesson because there are some important lessons there about that golden calf and about the rebellion of those people. But we won't want to focus on that tonight. What we want to look at tonight is as we're dwelling with God, we want to notice first of all that God was with Israel before they came to Mount Sinai. He was with them. He was their God, and they were his people, and he had destroyed the Egyptians and just brought plague after plague, 10 plagues on those people, and then wiped them out in the Red Sea to free his people, to bring them out. And in fact, at the beginning of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, one of the first things he says is, I'm the Lord your God that brought you up out of Egypt. Now, I don't know what other God they were expecting to talk to them. But that's the one that spoke to them, the one that brought them up out of Egypt. And he wanted to make that clear. Because of who I am, this is what you need to do. And he started listing in the things that they were supposed to do. You know, when somebody does us a favor, sometimes they expect great for us, they expect some reciprocal behavior. And God expected those people who had cried out to Him and who He had freed, He expected them to have a response. He expected them to obey Him and only Him and not any other gods. So here we are in Exodus 32 then, and they've built this golden calf. And Aaron tells the people, here, these are your gods that brought you up out of Egypt. Well, they should have known good and well that wasn't the same God that brought them up. But they went on and worshiped that God anyway. And the Lord, of course, knew it. And so He spoke to Moses in verse 9 and 10. And He says to Moses, you know, look at them. This stiff-necked people, the stubborn people, the rebellious people. And He said, let me just destroy them, consume them in my wrath. And then I'll raise you up and make you a great nation. Now here we see Moses' love for his fellow man. Because most people would have jumped at the chance. Ho, ho, get rid of them, they're trouble anyway. Yeah, take me, raise me, make me a nation. But Moses didn't do that. Instead, he begged God, pleaded with God, not to destroy those people. They were your people, Lord, and think about what the nations will say, that you brought them out just to wipe them off the face of the earth, and that you didn't really love them, you didn't care about them, and then people will even question whether it was because you weren't able to bring them into the land that you had promised, and that's why you had to kill them in the desert, because you just couldn't do it. And they'll question you. And so God relented. He didn't destroy them all right then. Moses went down with Joshua, who was on the mount with him. Do you ever wonder why Joshua was the one on the mount with Moses and not one of his own sons? I tell you, it's not Father's Day yet, but it's hard to find a good father in the Bible. You find some wonderful mothers, but it's hard to find a good father. He was so busy with this nation of people, he even had sent his wife and sons away. They weren't even there. He didn't even raise those boys. And you never read about them after his death. You don't read anything more about them. Don't know if they went back with their mother to live in the tents with their grandfather or what. But you don't read about them going into the land of Canaan or anything. Hardly. It's an interesting thing in and of itself. But Moses comes down and he's angry, of course, at the people because of the fact that they were just running wild. And so he calls on the Levites. Actually, he just says, whoever's on to me. And the Levites were the ones who came. And he said, you go, put on your sword, verse 27, and you go out in the camp and you start killing your brethren. That's a hard command. A minute ago, they were in the midst of worshiping the golden calf with the people. And then they have to first repent themselves and come back to Moses and the Lord. You know, there again, so many times we talked a few weeks ago about Caleb. So many times we see that there's just one or two that are standing for what's right. In this case, Moses and Joshua have come down the hill. And here's all the people in the midst of this sinfulness. And first he has to get the Levites to repent and come to him. And then they begin to punish the others for continuing to behave this way. And then Moses, of course, takes the golden calf and he grinds it to powder and he puts it in the water for them to have to drink that water with the gold from that golden calf. And then again, though he shows his love for the people, I mean, it's hard to say that after we see him telling the Levites to start killing them all. And certainly they didn't kill all of them, but they did kill 3,000, verse 28 tells us. And then the next day, Moses said, "You've sinned a great sin." They had violated the very first of God's commandments, that you're not supposed to worship anybody but me. You're not supposed to have any God before me. And they'd already broken that before Moses even got back down the mountain with those commandments. And he said, "I'm going to go and see if I can make atonement with the Lord." And so he goes back up the mountain to make that atonement. And when Moses asks God to forgive the people, he says again, they've sinned a great sin. And God already knew that. Notice what Moses says. "If you will forgive their sin, but if not, blot me out of the book of life." Blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. Moses loved his people so much that he was willing to be destroyed with them if God wouldn't be willing to forgive them. I can only think of one other person who ever expressed that sentiment, and that was the Apostle Paul, who said, "I wish that I could be accursed if it would mean that my brethren could be saved." And that's that same kind of sentiment that Moses expresses here. He wanted the people to be saved. But God explains to Moses what we all understand. No one can be punished for somebody else's sin. You've got to stand for your own sin. He says, "Whoever has sinned against me, I'll blot him out of my book." You can't take their place, Moses. If they've sinned against me, then they're the ones that'll get blotted out of my book, not you. He says that down in verse 33. Now he says, "Go lead the people to the place I've told you of. My angel will go before you, but I will visit their sin upon them." And the Lord plagued the people. Then we come to chapter 33. And in chapter 33, again, the Lord tells Moses, "Okay, leave this place. You camped here long enough. Time to go. You're heading toward that land." And as you go, in the first six verses there, as God describes this, he says in verse 2, "I will send my an angel before you and drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite." Notice what he says in verse number 3. "Unto a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in the midst of you, for you are a stiff-necked people, lest I consume you in the way." God tells his people, and all from the time that Adam and Eve sinned, all God has wanted has been to restore that relationship that he had with Adam and Eve in the garden before they sinned. To get back to that point where we could be with God, dwell with him and he with us. And yet here it is, he was with them as they came up out of Egypt, but now because of their sin, he tells Moses, "I'm not going to go up in the midst of them. But if I do, I'll destroy them." God is a holy God, and he cannot stand to be around sin. And sometimes, even as Christians, we take that too lightly, and we don't realize that when God says, I'm going to punish those who sin against me. But he means it. We think because we committed some sin and we didn't get struck dead right then, that it's okay. But it's not okay. Other people may keep hanging out with us, keep living with us, keep putting up with us. They may even condone our sin and excuse us of our sin. But God doesn't do that. God can forgive us of our sin. But if we're stiff-necked and rebellious as these people were, He will not dwell with us. And yet that was His purpose in the church, was to dwell with us. That's what He wants. That's why He sent His Son, so that He could be reconciled. But here's Moses and the people of Israel. And God says, I'll send my angel with you to take you into the land, but I'm not going with you. The people were upset. They mourned. They took off all their jewelry and just, they were upset when they found out that God wasn't going to go with them. They shouldn't have been surprised, however. After their behavior, they should have expected that God wasn't going to be with them. But notice what happens then, beginning in verse 7 down through verse 11. Moses took... Now it says in the King James, the tabernacle. That's not the tabernacle that they were to build, because they hadn't built it yet. But it was a tent, a tabernacle. That's what the word tabernacle really means, is just tent. It was a tent that he used when he was going to go in to talk to God. And he pitched this tent outside the camp, far off from the camp. He called it the tabernacle of the congregation. And anyone who wanted to seek the Lord had to come out there where Moses was. And Moses went out there with the tent. And another translation calls it the tent of meeting. And that's where if somebody wanted to come and meet with God or meet with Moses about what God had to say, that's where they'd go. And Moses would go out to the tent, and any time that he went into that tent of meeting to talk with God, the people would come and they would stand at the door of their tents and watch and see what was happening. And then when he entered, the cloudy pillar would come down on that place. And God would come and meet with Moses there. But Moses didn't dwell in the... God didn't dwell in the midst of the people. And in verse 11 is the verse that we mentioned a while ago, where it says that the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. Moses sometimes would go back to the camp, but Joshua never left out of that tabernacle. He stayed in that tabernacle of meeting. And it was during this time also that when Moses would go and talk with God, and then as he goes back and gets the new stone tablet, and he's in the presence of God for all this time, that his face began to glow. Because he was in God's presence so much. It began to shine, and he had to put that veil over it. But already then, after the law would get his, it began to diminish. The glow started to go away after he came back down from the mountain the second time. But here we see that Moses puts that tent, and he goes out to the tent to be with God, rather than staying in the camp with the people all the time. But what's more, we notice in verses 12 and following that God again tells them, okay, it's time for you to go. Now remember, God had told them, you go to that land. My angel's going to lead you. He's going to go before you. But I'm not going up in the middle of you. And again, then Moses comes to the Lord and he says in verse 12, "You say unto me, bring up this people, and you've not let me know whom you will send with me. But you have said, I know thee by name, and you have found grace in my sight. Now therefore, if I have found grace in your sight, show me your way that I may know you, that I may find grace in your sight and consider the nation of you." And then in verse 14, he said, "My presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest." Oh, see, before he said, "Oh, I'm going to send my angel with you, but I'm not going to go up with you." But now God says, "Okay, my presence is going to go with you." And then Moses says, "If your presence doesn't go, then don't take us up from here. Don't make us go without you." There are far too many Christians and far too many churches that are going all kinds of places without God. But Moses, as the leader of those people, he said to God, "If you're not going with us, then we don't need to go." And we need to understand that. If there is anywhere that God can't go or won't go with us, then we don't need to go there either. Moses understood that. Moses refuses to go without God's presence going with them. He said, "Just don't take us up. Just don't even try to send us up there." And then he says in verse 16, "For wherein shall it be known here that I and thy people have found grace in thy sight? Is it not in that thou goest with us? So shall we be separated, I and thy people, from all the people that are upon the face of the earth." And he said, that's what makes us different from all the rest of the people in the world, is that you go with us. If you're not going with us, then we're no different from all the rest of the people. And we need to understand that. As Christians, if we're not with God, if we're not going with God, then we're no different than everybody else in the world. We're just going wherever we want to go and doing whatever we want to do. And what are we accomplishing? Oh, we're living a life. We're existing. But if we're not going with God, we're not His people. We don't belong to Him. We're not special in any way. But then, because of Moses' trust in God, his faith in God, his dedication to God, because of that, and because of his relationship with God, he's able to ask God for a blessing, one that most folks never would have even imagined. Remember, the children of Israel didn't even want to hear God talk to them again. But because Moses loves the Lord so much and wants to be so close to Him, did you ever have a pen pal or maybe a long-lost relative that you maybe had talked to over the phone? Or I know this happens now with the internet. People meet somebody on the internet and they talked with them and various things, but you've never met them in person. You've never seen them. And you want to put a face with the name, so to speak. Well, Moses has talked with God. And he's been with God, but he's never seen God. And so Moses, he just asked, "Show me your glory. Let me see you." That's a bold question that Moses asked. "Show me your glory." And God, of course, says to him, "I tell you what I'll do. I'll let all my goodness pass by. And then, after that, then you can't, he said, you can't see my face. You just can't. You can't see my face and live. No one can. And so he says, here's what I'll do. There's a spot here in the rock, and I'll put you in the rock, and as my glory passes by, I'll hide you with my hand. Now, you realize, of course, that God's a spirit, so he doesn't have hands and face and things like we do, but basically what he's saying is, he said, you just can't stand to see the full force of my glory. Because you've got to be dead to see God fully. You just can't do it and live. It just can't happen. And so God says, I'm going to cover you with my hand while I pass by, and then I'll take away my hand, and you can see my back. But you can't see my face. And so Moses at least got to see a little bit of God, even though he didn't get to see everything he wanted. He got a great blessing, though. And what we'll find is that the closer we get to God, the more determined we are to dwell with God, even if it means not being with others. You know, Moses had to go out of the camp and go to where God's tent of meeting was to meet with God. He couldn't meet with God if he stayed in the camp. And we can't meet with God as long as we stay in the world. We've got to come out from among them. And the further we get from them, and the closer we get to God, the more of God we'll have an opportunity to see. Now, we won't be able to see His face until that last day, until judgment, and then we'll be able to see Him and be with Him. And we'll be able to live with Him where He is. But we'll get to see more and more of Him the more and more we study His Word and grow closer to Him and become more like Him. So do you want to know God better? You know, there are some people in life that we're happy to have an acquaintance relationship with. We're perfectly happy just to kind of know their name, maybe. Or maybe it's somebody, well, we know who they are, but we don't really know them. And there are some people, we get along fine like that. We just don't care to know them. But then sometimes there's somebody that we just really want to get to know better. I know most of us had that particular situation happen when we were younger with a particular person of the opposite sex. That we maybe saw them from a distance or knew a little bit about them and said, well, I got to know that person better. I got to get to know them better. And so we went, and a lot of times, you know, you wind up married to somebody like that. You get to know them so, a little better and a little better. But what about with our relationship to God? How well do we want to get to know God? Are we happy to just have this kind of, well, I know about God. I've heard of Him. Or do we really want to live with God? And sometimes we think, well, yeah, I want to go live with God when I go to heaven. But what about here? What about now? Do we want to dwell with God now? Because if we're not ready to dwell with Him here, then we won't be ready to dwell with Him in heaven. And if we can't allow Him to dwell with us here, then He will not allow us to dwell with Him there. Moses is a great example to us because he wanted to be as close to God as he could be. He wanted to know God as well as he could. And we need to learn from his example. We need to have that kind of attitude in our lives as well. Well, how do we get to know God any better? Well, the only way we're going to get to know God is to read what he's written for us. We will not learn anything about God except what he has revealed to us. The philosophies of men, human thoughts, and human wisdom will never reveal God to us. We will never get to know God any better through those things. Television shows, radio, songs, on you know, music, things. Those things are never going to let us get to know God any better. Art and entertainment, recreation. No. The only way we can get to know God is through His book that He's revealed to us. So if we really want to get to know God better, we're going to have to open it up and study it. And there is a difference between reading and studying. We can read it and just read right over it and it not mean anything to us. We need to study it. If you're here and you don't have the kind of relationship with God that you would like to have, it's not because He doesn't want to have a relationship with you. He has done everything He can to have the relationship. You've just got to respond to Him. You can do it. If you're here and you have a need to make changes in your life, you need to respond to the invitation, need the prayers of the church to help with that. And then we ask that you respond as we stand and as we sing.